International Broadcasting lives on 5085. The Big One, WTWW.
Please stand by as we get ready to launch another episode of this Reality Radio Cafe Cast with your host and my husband, Denny J, K5DCC.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, liftoff.
Now grab your glass and get ready to fill it up with some radio on the rocks.
Vehicle's pitching downrange.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Digicom Cafe for a spontaneous Cafe Cast interview with Chris Esser, KC2RGW of Deering, New Hampshire. I think you'll enjoy this conversation. I will be joined by my friend K1BAD and also Professor Jim W0RLD later on in our interview. So pull up a chair and enjoy our conversation.
I'm in New Hampshire. Been a ham since 2007 and came in at the bottom of a solar cycle and then moved to an apartment. So I was off the air for 5 years. Came back in the air right in time for the dead bottom of another solar cycle. So I've never had good propagation as a ham.
Well, anyway, great. Well, I was wondering if my posting a link out there would bring in someone else. So glad to see you show up. Your mic sounds fantastic. What aspect of ham radio are you most involved in?
I do a little bit of everything. I don't do CW, but I'm a rag chewer. So I spend a lot of time on sideband. I play with Packet. I play, JS8 occasionally. I'm big on keyboard-to-keyboard digital, probably 25% digital operations for me. And then just rag chewing. I like meeting people. Regional communications I enjoy because then I can actually meet people in person. But I dabble in all of it. CW I've never been able to learn, so it's the one mode that I've never been able to actually add to the pile.
Wonderful. Well, what I do here is record podcasts. We have a daily podcast. We call them Cafe Cast. We meet here every morning about 7 a.m. Central Time with my co-host, Professor Jim Brown, who is an extra class. He's 76 and a retired professor and dean of the university in Indianapolis. And we just have a blast. So I started this podcast about a little over 2 years ago now, and I've got over 300 episodes. We interview hams and have them tell their stories. And it used to be we'd schedule them, but nowadays I'm just going to start doing them as people drop in and when it's convenient for them. So if you don't mind, I'm recording right now. And if you'd like to tell your story, your personal story about how you got into ham radio and what it's meant to you.
Oh, sure. I've been involved in radio. I've been fascinated by radio my whole life, basically. One of my favorite toys as a child was a G.I. Joe radio my parents gave me. I used to spend just hours and hours spinning the dial one end to the other, trying to figure out where the stations are and, where the people were that I was hearing. And that moved into shortwave radio. My uncle was in the Peace Corps, and he had a Grundig portable. And I think I was about 8 or 9 when I discovered his shortwave radio, and he had a long wire on it. And we were vacationing at his house, spending a weekend there. And I spent the entire weekend just spinning the shortwave dial. So it kind of set the hook for me for radio, walkie-talkies as a kid. And then, as I got older, I bought myself a copy of the ARRL handbook. I found one in a reference section in a library, actually. And I got myself, paper route money saved up, got myself my own copy of the handbook. And started making antennas that I soldered into my walkie-talkies and made myself a full-wave loop for 27 megahertz, channel 14, I think the kids' walkie-talkies were on, and realized, hey, now I can talk to people up on the highway. I can get, longer than 50 yards away. And that was basically the start of it. And then, years later, I got into, my parents would never allow me to put an antenna on the house. They're like, what are you doing with that, fool radio stuff? They never understood my interests. So I had to wait until I was old enough to drive so I could finally put a mobile in a car. And I wound up on CB 11 meters, And, you know, the CW requirement kept me off the air for 25 years. I could never learn CW. Tried and tried and tried. I took lessons. I just don't hear it right, I guess. So fast forward to 2007, and they dropped the code. I think I took the test about 3 weeks after I found out they announced that, tested through general. And here I am.
Wow. So you've been a ham for how many years?
Since 2007.
What kind of a station have you got there at home?
It's a whole mess now. When I first started, I was pretty broke, so I had a lot of used gear and kind of cobbled things together. And now it's a different situation. It's kind of peak toy budget time for me. So when I sold the house and moved to New England, I used to live in New Jersey. I basically sold everything off that I had because I was going to an apartment for a while. So when I got up here about a year ago, December is when I got back on the air. I had to start from scratch. So the first rig I picked up was a TS-590SG, and I've got that here. I really like it, especially for digital modes. You know, getting back in and realizing they finally put a sound card in the rigs now, so you could just, you know, run a USB cable and go. You know, what a great revelation. I used to use Signalinks all the time. And then I got into SDRs, so I was an early adopter of SDR receivers, Soft Rocks, and QS1R eventually, and I was doing IF taps on a bunch of older radios back in like 07, 08, pretty early into it. But I always had just receivers, so when I got up here, finally, I was like, you know, maybe I'll buy a transceiver. So I've got a Sun SDR2DX and an Apache Labs 7000. So I kind of went crazy on a shopping spree.
Cool. Now you talk about IF taps. You're talking about actually getting into an HF radio and pulling the signal off the board in the IF section?
Yeah, exactly. So you basically solder a jumper into the IF, and depending on the radio's design, ahead of the first section, if you want a wider view, or behind the filter, if you want a very narrow, protected view, if you will. Depends on what you're trying to do, but you basically tap into that. Some rigs are really easy. You can just loop coax jumpers. I think it's a CMMX connector that they just pop in. But you tap off the IF, usually use a high impedance buffered tap so that you don't interfere with, you know, the IF signal itself into the rig. And then you take that and feed it out and split that IF into either the antenna port on an SDR receiver, or you could split it to I and Q with something like an LP pan that I was using years ago, and then bring that out to SDR software, and you have full pan adapter view is the whole idea. You can even use it as a second receiver depending on how wide your tap is.
Oh, cool. I'm really fascinated by that. I'd be afraid to get into my radio and mess it up, but I've got one of those Nuelec SDR, and my rig is an IC746 Pro. Is that a good radio to do that with, you think?
Yeah, you could do that. The Nuelec, I was using crystal bound soft rocks. So the 40 meter one, I believe, is what was closest to the IF frequency of rigs. The 746, you have to find out if it's just a fixed IF and what the frequency is. And the Nuelec will cover the frequency range. But you basically tap out of there with a buffered tap board. You have to give it 5 volts. You can usually pull 5 volts from somewhere into the rig, run it to the buffered tap board, then bring that out and feed it right into the antenna port of the Nuelec. And if you ever go down that road, just be careful what you're doing, because to your point, when you're tapping in the IF, if you don't couple it properly, you can introduce noise and basically ruin the receive of the radio until you correct it.
I wonder if there's some documentation online. I'll have to do a search for it. It has crossed my mind in the past. I have heard others just mention it in passing, and I thought that would be cool because I can't afford another new radio. My co-host here in our Cafe Cast, Professor Jim Brown, he just got his first HF station set up in the 50 years he's been a ham, and it's a 7300. Like you say, it's got the built-in audio card into it, so it makes it very easy to interface to his computer. I'm using a Signalink here for my stuff.
Yeah, Signalinks are a great device. I started out with just homemade cobbled together. I used the old Radio Shack isolation transformers and just wired my own interface up years ago. But the signal link is so much easier to deal with, you know, until they came out with the newer rigs with the sound card built in. I've used signal links for regular keyboard modes, PSK and all of those. But I've also used it for packet radio. It's a handy thing to have.
Yeah. Now, with your voice, it seems to me you would be one of those big AMers or active on single sideband. Do you do much of the voice modes?
Oh, yeah. That's probably 75% of what I do. And I was a sound engineer by trade for about 5 years. So the audio, playing around with microphones and processing and audio gear, it's a big part of the hobby for me. It's one of the reasons why I got into the SDR radios, because you can basically set those up for broadcast sound audio if you want. So I definitely spend a lot of time on sideband, and I spend a fair amount of time on AM as well. Up here in the Northeast, there's some incredible AM stations up here. They sound like a commercial station.
Wow. Well, you must be doing some special EQing on that mic, because you sound fantastic. Nice and rich and deep.
Yeah, thanks. It's the first mic was a High LPR 30 that I was talking to you on. I can actually show you. Let's see. So here's the first mic I was talking on. It's a High LPR 30 on a boom. And then I have an XLR switching matrix, so I can pick the microphone and then pick where it goes. And now I'm back on the headset. And this headset is an Audio-Technica BPHS-1. They use it for like sports casting. It's a wide range dynamic element in the headset. And I use, outboard gear. So rack processing, like studio rack processing for compression and gating and EQing.
Cool. If you want, share a picture in the chat side here. We use this on the side for sharing links or images or whatever. Of course, a lot of people that listen don't have access to that, and I invite them to join us. You just go to k5dcc.com and you can participate in our voice chat and also the text chat. I love Telegram. This is the coolest platform, best thing to come along since I've gotten involved in any of this stuff. And this Telegram voice chat makes such a great recording studio.
I just put in the headset picture.
Oh, nice.
And then the Heil is just a PR30. You've probably seen those before.
I'm using a MXL microphone here, studio mic, which has to have phantom power.
It sounds very good as well, by the way.
Thank
you. Nice and clean.
So as far as digital modes, now I've really fallen in love with digital, and we do FT8.
I like to rag you, if you can't tell by my long-windedness and the fact that I even joined in here. I like meeting people and chewing the rag and just, talking about nonsense. And the JT modes are unbelievable from a technology standpoint. The efficiency of them, it's almost magic what they can accomplish in terrible conditions. But you can't really exchange much information, which, like, JSA call is the one that I use the most of those modes. And they basically adapted FT8 and made it into basically a chat room, right, if you will. At least you can exchange some thoughts. So I don't use them often. They're great for patterning antennas. And if you're collecting, entities, it's great for that. But I don't know. I don't care about collecting entities. I collect paper QSL cards from people I've had, like meaningful conversations with. But I don't care how many countries I have on a list. So I don't work a lot of them. But I believe FT4 is newer and faster, so that people can just, make contacts quicker when the band conditions permit. It's not as robust as FT8, if I'm not mistaken. Usually slower means more sensitive. So if the band conditions are better, just like with JS8 call, you can go to a faster mode like turbo if the band conditions allow. That's the idea of FT4, as I understand it.
Okay, well, FT4 is what they use for contesting, apparently, because it is twice as fast as FT8. But yeah, like you, I like meeting people and having a conversation. By the way, a good friend of mine here in our cafe, Mello, just joined us, K1BAD. Come on in, Mello. Meet Chris, new fellow here in the cafe.
Hey, well, good afternoon, gentlemen, and good afternoon, Chris. Welcome.
Well, Mello, Chris just joined as a result of a conversation I was having with a fellow from Texas on JS8. And he's up from the part of the country that you just left.
Oh, good old New England.
Yeah, I'm a New Jersey refugee in New Hampshire now for about 2 years, about 30 minutes or so due west of Concord, Manchester, in Deering, a tiny town in New Hampshire.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. We, well, my bride's from Jersey and I'm from New York. Actually, she grew up in Jersey. She's originally from India, but she grew up in Jersey. I'm originally from New York, but we landed in Massachusetts and now just recently, last December, moved to here to North Carolina.
Yeah, I went from New Jersey, 30 some years there. I was from Sandy Hook area, Middletown, central New Jersey, near the coast. Went to Mass for work. So I went from a state that I hated because it was overregulated and oppressively taxed to a state that basically taught them how to do that and was like, what did I do? So I just escaped up here into the woods in New Hampshire.
I hear you. Good old Taxachusetts.
So I take it you're on an acreage over there?
Yeah, I'm at about 1,150 feet. Top of a hill on a dirt road with about 10 acres, a little log cabin for a house. And it's just dirt cheap up here. That's another reason why I came up here, because in order to have acreage in Massachusetts, you have to have some cash. And it was not within my reach.
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, goodness.
So what are you doing for internet there, Chris?
That's a funny part of the story. So my wife and I love New England. We grew up vacationing up here, and we like the snow. We like the cold, at least so far. And we looked for 2 years for a place across New Hampshire and Maine. And I was looking for some acreage. I was looking for the right house. No restrictions, no covenants, no HOAs, which even up here in the woods, there's a lot of restrictions on properties, covenants on the deeds and things like that. And then internet. Because I work out of my house there, Mellow. So I needed, broadband internet for video conferencing. So it took us 2 years. And finally, we saw this place in an ad, popped up here, took a look at it. We were like, well, it's a log cabin, which we never thought we would find. We were kind of looking for one. It's on acres. And I have Xfinity for cable on a dirt road in the middle of the woods. I don't even know how it happened, but it works quite well. So I'm happy about it.
Well, that's good. You don't see that happen too often.
No, and in most places, we walked away from some unbelievable properties because they just had DSL, and that really doesn't work out for video conferencing.
Yeah, no, I could see you walking away from that. Oh, goodness. Yeah, no, we're just out here in December. I actually stayed in Mass to finish up work until April. So I'm my bride's been here since December. I just got back here in the middle of April, but loving it and don't regret coming out here. Should have done it sooner. Should have listened to her. She's been wanting to get out down here for a while, but light finally dawned on Marblehead. Those from Massachusetts will get what that means. So we're here and we're enjoying it.
Oh, were you at Marblehead when you were in Mass?
I worked near Marblehead for a short while when I first got on the job. We used to patrol the Lynn, Swampscott, Marblehead area.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a beautiful area, the coastal area of Mass. We've been out to Marblehead Neck a bunch. There's a nice park out there. I love the topology of the area, but the traffic, just I couldn't take it. I don't like congestion and... We were living in Melrose. We were living in Revere, suburbs of Boston. And you go 2 miles away, it's a 35-minute ordeal. Parking's impossible. What we discovered is neither of us like the city in general. Boston, much better than New York, but neither of us are made for that. So,
yeah, no, I don't blame you. Revere was my old stomping ground. Lived in Revere for a bit, went to Chelsea High. But not a fan of. I mean, the traffic has changed over the years. It just got worse and worse as the years went on. Before we moved here, we lived in Rainham, and from Boston to Rainham was 37 miles, and it would take me in the afternoons to get home, sometimes upwards of 2 hours. For 37 miles, that's ridiculous. So, we are happy not being stuck in traffic, being out here. So.
Yeah, I bet. So you're with the state police when you're working in Revere. I bet that was a busy beat, right? I mean, it's transformed a lot rapidly over the past years, but I can tell by looking around what that neighborhood must be like when it gets going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I first got on, we were still the Metropolitan Police. So it was a lot more fun back then. We merged probably, I want to say it was 92. We merged with the state police. And but that area has changed quite a bit. It's changed over the years, and policing in general has changed. So I'm glad to be out of it. Don't plan to get back in again.
Yeah, I was a volunteer EMT firefighter for like 7 years in New Jersey, and said, you know, maybe I'll go into law enforcement. You know, I was on the path to go in. I made hundreds of connections in law enforcement, and I think you timed it perfectly, because I don't even know who will be left to do the job the way things are going right now. It's crazy.
No, it really is. It was. I saw it getting worse from year to year. I came in at a time where it still wasn't too bad to be a police officer, but over the last years before I retired, because I retired back in 2007, and it was already going sideways. And so since that time, you know, I pastored full time for a couple of years, and then I went to federal security, managed a armed security contract out of Boston for the federal buildings, and eventually went to a college police department, which was essentially babysitting a bunch of kids that want to be adults but want to be treated like babies whenever they start whining. So it was essentially customer service with a badge and trying not to hug people really tightly around the neck.
Yeah, I was a contract guard. And that's a circus, the whole security contracting thing in the federal government. It's an utter circus. I spent, like I said, about 5 years in that world, and did all kinds of crazy subcontract part-time gigs doing.
Oh, yeah. It can get pretty weird when you're doing stuff for the federal government. It's just we worked with FPS and yeah, you know, between working for state government and being contracted with federal government, you just walk away shaking your head going, if people only knew. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, sorry about the phone ringing, but that was Professor Jim calling me on the bat phone.
Professor Jim.
Yep, he's joining us now. And Jim, this is a spontaneous Cafe Cast interview with KC2RGW, Chris Esser, out in New Hampshire. He happened to be reading the mail in a conversation I was having on JS8, and I shared the link to our chat trying to get Bob to come join us, and here comes Chris. So, and he's got spectacular audio. In fact, Chris, I was just looking at your QRZ page, and I see you even have a separate web page dealing with your audio setup. Sounds like you're kind of a guru on good sounding audio here.
I wouldn't say that. I was a sound engineer in clubs and did some touring, and I enjoy the gear. And I just, a lot of people ask me on the air, you know how I get the audio that I have. So rather than repeat myself over and over, I decided to knock it out in a couple of web pages. And like I said, I work in tech, so I've been doing, you know, HTML and writing web pages for, since 1996, I think, was the first web page I ever put up anywhere. So it's been a while. So I just, you know, put that stuff up there for fun and to help other people get their radios set up.
Well, that's awesome. I was just talking to Jim the other day about, I wish more hams would take the time to put up a nice bio on their QRZ page, because that's one of the first things we always do is, let's check this guy out. Let's see what he's doing, what his gear is all about. And so you've got a very nice looking QRZ page, and Jim Mello just happened to drop in. And of course, these guys are from the same general area up there in New England. And so they were carrying on a bit of a conversation here too. So anyway, Jim, introduce yourself to Chris.
Oh, hi, Chris. I'm Jim Brown, W0RLD. And I'm just looking at your QRZ page now. Very nice station you have there. I'm just getting on the air after a 50-year hiatus, so everything is new to me. This stuff is absolutely fantastic. I have a ICOM 7300, still learning what all the knobs do.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to pop out of here. Professor Jim, good to see you. And Chris, pleasure to meet you. Denny, I'll catch you a little later on. And it's good to be in here for at least a moment and catch this.
All right. Have a blessed day. Jim is my co-host here for our morning cafe cast. And this was just a spontaneous thing. So I kind of sent him a message and he just called me up in the bat phone. But Jim, you got any questions for Chris regarding his hobby?
Not yet. Let me see. I'm still looking over the bio page here, and there's a lot to take in.
It's a lot of nonsense accumulated there, that's for sure. Nice to meet you, Jim. And getting back or just starting in the hobby, I'll tell you, if you were away from the hobby for 20 years and you get back in now, you must feel like you went through a time machine. Even since I was licensed in 2007, the shift in technology at a price point in particular, an affordable price point, is just mind-blowing, because I was off the air for 5 years and just got back in a year ago, December again, and the 7300 was out. And I was part of a project for an SDR receiver called the QS1R that some guys know about. It was a very high-end SDR receiver. Back in 07 or so, 08, very early for the power it had. But just that receiver was $1,000. And now you have the 7300, which incidentally, ICOM basically took the design of the QS1R. One of their engineers ordered one from the guy who designed it and demanded the schematics. Then about 8 months later, the 7300 came out. It's almost identical architecture. But the 7300 is, they were for a while about $750. It's just an incredible bargain and a really well-made radio.
You're reminding me that... I still have to do a mail-in rebate to take another $100 off. So I'll wind up paying $1,000 if I get the rebate figured out.
That's worth every penny of that.
Radio. It seems to be. I'm 76 and I got my license when I was 16, so that was a while ago, and I haven't been on the air for about 50 years, and indeed, I have been in a time warp. I mean, this stuff is just mind-blowing.
The peak of technology 50 years ago? The Collins lines, I would imagine, right?
Yep, that was Collins was the premier line at that time, and what I had was a Heathkit DX40. And some people around town had a Heathkit lunchbox, they called it, because for 2 meters. And it was about the size of a lunchbox that kids would take their lunch to school with, hence the nickname lunchbox.
And Heathkit was the Collins knockoff.
Well, yes. And the Heathkit building instructions, the manuals to build something from Heathkit, and the company was out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Their instructions were crystal clear. Any idiot who knew how to solder could put together a Heathkit, and I put together lots of Heathkits. So, yeah, that's the way it was then. We tuned up our transmitters with a 60-watt light bulb. When the light burned brightest, that was when you were all tuned up. And then we accidentally discovered you could talk all the way across town in 80 meters on a light bulb. That was a lot of fun.
I've done the equivalent on digital modes. I've had conversations on PSK31. I'm pretty sure, PSK31 and probably Olivia as well on my dummy load, and didn't even realize I hadn't gone back to the antenna. I'm scratching my head thinking, man, the propagation's terrible today.
Yep. It was a lot of fun. That light bulb was a lot of fun because you just get a pigtail socket from the hardware store and solder the pigtails to a coax connector, and away you went. And as you talked, everything was AM, of course. As you talked, the light bulb got brighter and dimmer as you talked. It was just a lot of fun. So you got a visual indication of your speech. Great fun.
That, and then a lot of the rigs back then had the, what were they called? The neon tuning eye tubes, the glowing eye that would, it was for zero beating, right? Is when that would glow.
Yep.
Jim, we were talking also about SDR. Of course, you guys have the SDR on your radio. And I've got the ICOM 746 Pro, and we were just talking about tapping the IF. In fact, Chris, I just found a website, Amateur Radio News, ICOM 746 Pro Pan Adapter. They got a thing called a card called iFace version 1, IO signals. And you could get that signal and put it into an SDR. You got me going here, man.
Those pre-built boards, I don't know that one for the 746, but as an example, there's a board called the PTRX 7300 that's a pre-built, basically plug-and-play. It's the whole board is assembled. It just has some coax jumpers and some like board pin header connectors that you basically just jump in and out of a 7300. It's a similar kind of thing where it's all done for you in a board, and it brings the signal out, and you just basically run that signal out to an SDR receiver. So you could, if you just want it for a pan adapter for the visual, you don't need anything fancy. So one of the Nuelec little TV dongles would work perfectly for it. If you want to use it as a real second receiver off the tap, something a little bit better like an SDR Play RSP series or RSPDX will have more headroom. They have more dynamic range. And then you could use it as a second receiver, really. But they're a great way to do it because they're safer. The way we were talking about, Jim, before you joined, I used to do picks off the IF path in radios, and I would use the Clifton Labs buffer boards. I didn't design the board, but if you got it wrong, you would inject noise into your IF, which would basically, you know, ruin your receiver until you corrected the error.
Interesting. Well, this has been fun. I love these spontaneous things. Morning cafe casts are very free flowing. Have you got any questions for Chris there, Jim?
Not yet. I bookmarked your webpage on audio, and I'll pore over it later. I taught multimedia story in my journalism program, and what I taught my students is get the mic as close to the people's mouth as possible, and that's going to give you a good signal to noise ratio, and that's about all I know about audio.
By the way, your audio has gotten a lot of noise since last we talked. Are you on a different device or something here?
No, I'm not.
Chris,
what
would you say? I'll analyze that. What's the problem there?
Yeah, that's sampling rate issue. So your computer may need a reboot because it sounds like something is interfering with the sampling rate, which is how it converts from analog to digital and back again. And that kind of grinding static is usually like a sampling rate issue. So it could be low bandwidth. So the codec on, I don't know this telegram very well. It could be low bandwidth and they just are pushing the codec quality down, or the computer just might be busy. You might have a runaway process or something that's hitting the CPU, and that'll do it too.
Which is strange because he's got super fast internet. I'm on cellular at about 5 down and 5 up. So.
Yeah, I'm on Wi-Fi, so I'm hoping it hasn't been breaking up at all, but I don't even have wired Ethernet on the Shack computer here because it usually works pretty well.
No, you sound excellent. Well, thanks, Chris, for dropping in. You kind of made my afternoon. This is always exciting to have someone follow through and follow the link, and welcome to the Digicom Cafe, and feel free to join us any morning you're free and bored, like today, at 7 in the morning. That'd be 8 your time, and just to jump into the conversation. It's just all gathering here in the cafe, grab a cup of coffee and one of Jim's bagels, and we have a conversation. I have no idea where it's going to go.
There are no good bagels in New England. You bring up a very sore point. There's only a few things I miss about New Jersey: bagels, diners, and pizza, because they don't know how to do any of those properly in New England. But one of these days we have to just make our own. But yeah, nice meeting you guys. And I tend to be on a Northeast Rag Chew group in the mornings. But if I think of it, I'll try to pop back in here and see what's doing.
I will send you my bagel study. And there's a backstory, and I'll put the backstory in the email, but I'm sure you'll enjoy the bagel study.
Oh, yeah, please do. That would probably be a hoot. We have all the equipment here to make our own, and I've been doing a little bit of research on, like, you know, lye or baking soda, and, you know, of course, the only proper way is to boil them. So we've been doing bread during COVID, just to, you know, stay busy. My wife and I were both chefs years ago, so I'm very fortunate. So my wife's been, you know, making homemade bread, and we did pretzels, which are very close cousin to a bagel, the way you do pretzels, but we haven't done the bagels yet.
I use blackstrap molasses and baking soda in my boil, and I'll just briefly tell you the backstory. I was instrumental in nationalizing a new reporting technique called computer-assisted reporting. And I posted a picture of my bagel batch on Facebook, and some of my computer-assisted reporting gurus took me to task because I hadn't put any means and standard deviations in there in the posting. And so I responded to the criticism with the bagel study. That's the backstory.
And he also makes bread.
Yeah, I make bread too. And I have sourdough pancakes every day for lunch.
Nice. Yeah, I'll definitely I'll kind of see what your study is. Oh, I see you were a professor of journalism too. That's pretty neat. So another funny, I'm just full of stories here, but my uncle is Brian Williams from NBC.
What? Is that right?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, and believe me, I was there.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you're in the right circle here. We love to tell stories and hear stories, and Jim has one, at least one, every episode we have. So we'd love to have you drop in and share some of yours. And
all righty, guys. I'll let you go. And again, it was a pleasure talking to you, and have a great afternoon.
You too.
73. Right. 73, guys.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Thanks, Chris. 73. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Extra Class Amateur Radio Operator, K5DCC. I just upgraded to my Extra Class last year. You know how I did it? I used HamTest Online. Did you know that HamTest Online is the top-rated study program on eham.net? 97% of reviewers gave them 5 stars. They have more 5-star user reviews than all other study methods combined, and success is guaranteed. If you fail the amateur radio license exam, they will refund your subscription. It's a no-brainer. You pass the exam or get a full refund. Try it for yourself at hamtestonline.com.
Hello, Cafeers. Denny J here in the beautiful Ozarks of Northwest Arkansas. Out in the country, 25 miles from any large city. Out here in the country, we struggle to get good internet. Maybe you have the same problem. If you live in a rural area, you don't have many options. It's either satellite or DSL or cellular. And believe me, we've tried them all. Just recently, I was more than happy to pay the penalty to get out of our satellite service. Latency was horrible, and for amateur radio communications, the delays were up to 5 seconds, and you probably experienced what that's like. Our DSL service was also very unreliable. We rarely got the speeds that we were promised, and it kept dropping out. But now I think I found a service that we're going to love. It's called Visible.com. It's a company that's owned by Verizon and kind of a pared-back service, but works beautifully for my situation here out in the country on 15 acres. Visible.com offers only one plan. It's unlimited everything. Unlimited calls, text, and internet at slightly slower speeds than their top drawer plan at Verizon. But it does use the Verizon network. Go to Visible.com and use my referral code 3-November-3-7-November Tango. Also, to get your $40 a month bill reduced to $25, you need to be part of a party pay group. You can join me in our Digicom Cafe party. You will find the link to these things down in the show notes here, along with links to our Digicom Cafe community portal, which is a Facebook alternative. Also, our Telegram community, where we have text and voice chat, and also our live cafe cast here in the Digicom Cafe. So get your line at visible.com. And again, use my referral code and join our party to get that bill down to $25 a month.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe cast. We invite you to join our mighty network's amateur radio community at members.digicomcafe.com.